time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The madness grows in this sick society. Posers laud shallow youth for their empty fads. Phonies seek out vain celebrities for instruction. Slaves glorify globalist parasites for their stolen wealth and power. Politicians are puppets, not leaders. Sheep wear masks and accept deadly vaccines. In these dark times, the wise must lead us. So we call the Wisdom Circle. Each week, Scorpio and Giuseppe will call upon the sages, the learned, the pragmatic, to discuss the great problems and distill the great solutions. Here is the leader of the Wisdom Circle, Scorpio.
Okay, hello and welcome to Circle of Wisdom. We're kicking off a brand new show here today on Revolution Radio. And we're going to keep it sort of as a roundtable and try to go in depth on various subjects and try to gain some wisdom about what is happening in our crazy world today. And today, we're going to talk about a few things, but we're going to really try to zero in on this so-called global reset. And I've dug up some interesting facts about the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. And that said, I want to bring on my co-host, Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Scorpio. It's an honor to join you in this great reset of the Wednesday noontime show. And I think it'll be really great because we're focused on wisdom and the big picture and solutions, not just complaining about things, but we'll try and bring a pragmatic viewpoint, an insightful viewpoint without the burden of ego or vanity.
Yeah, and you know, wisdom is an excellent concept in term, because, you know, wisdom is very different than intelligence. You can be very intelligent and not have any wisdom at all.
Oh, my goodness. That pretty much sums up the gamer generation. They've been subtly mutated by playing so many of these video games and having so much stimulation to their frontal lobe. Their brains work incredibly fast, but they lack any kind of common sense or wisdom. I mean, they're so narcissistic and vain. And that if this country's going to survive, somehow the youth need to embrace wisdom and look to their elders, and they don't. The whole society, controlled by the mass media criminal syndicate, is changed it to where there used to be to honor the older people, and now everyone looks down on the older, like, oh, they're Luddites, they're out of touch, and we young people, we know it all, we're really cool, and I'm different because I have piercings and all these tattoos, and I dyed my hair pink, and I'm the only one.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of elders, we have Mr. Mike Gaddy on with us today to participate in our discussion. Mike, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for the elder clip.
I thought you might appreciate that. But it's true.
It's true. I'm not, but I chuckle when you said it. And I tell you what, I have found the time I spend with you and Giuseppe is just a very positive time for me. And I truly enjoy it. And I appreciate your invitation to come on today.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much. And Mike, you've really your knowledge of history is really transformative. Anyone that reads your material and then goes and checks out, you know, the source material for themselves, it's a transformative thing in terms of understanding history. And we have to know our history to understand, you know, where we're going or what we face.
Well, absolutely. Patrick Henry said, I know of no way to judge the future but by the past. And I was trying to think which philosopher said it was. A person who is unaware of their past history will always be a child. And I think especially what Giuseppe alluded to, I think that's exactly what we're looking at today.
Yes, the man-child phenomenon.
Yeah, I have to state that it's just an honor to have Mike Gaddy here, the Rebel Madman, and I truly treasure any time I'm involved with a show with Mike, because his knowledge of real history, original source history, is just mind-blowing, and it's just wonderful. I wish there were 100 Mike Gaddys.
Well, I'm not sure the world's ready for that, Giuseppe, but thank you.
Well, what's so fascinating, it's not a matter of your opinion. It's like you go read the source material and then see what conclusion you come to. You know, it's hard to disregard the actual writings and thoughts of the people who are involved in the historical events.
Well, I found that to be especially true, and I won't bore you gentlemen with because I know you've heard it before, but how I began to find these documents, and it just went against everything I had been taught through 16 years of school, and it was hard to accept, but I think you have to come to grips if you're an honest person, and you come to grips with the fact that what you have been taught is a lie, then you have to make an adjustment in your life, and that is the reason with the classes I've been doing now for, 15 years or so in various locales, various states. I start off every class with don't believe a damn thing I say, but research everything and learn for yourself. So I can tell you where to look, but I'm not going to tell you what to
with
think.
Wisdom too.
Oh, well, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to walk over you there, Dave, but what it is go look for yourself. And in my classes, I don't tell you what to think. I tell you where to look. And I wish that my instructors back when I started in school would have been would have done that for me instead of telling me, okay, here, we're going to feed you this revisionist history pablum, and now you will make all of your decisions in the future based on these falsehoods that we're going to teach you. I was telling John Breeson last night, I was on his program, and I was telling him that I got angry. I got angry at the people who had taught me falsehoods, but then I began to realize that what they were doing was just regurgitating what they had been taught, because this revisionist history thing has been going on for a century now.
Man, that's exactly right, Mike. And the sad thing about the lies of academia and history, it also extends to the lies of archaeology, the lies of medicine, the lies of practically every major aspect of society.
Well, you're exactly right, Giuseppe. And unfortunately, the very core of government has always been the lie. Because if the government told the truth, nobody would want it.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. And, you know, you're making another great distinction, Mike, too. It's like you don't tell people what to think. You tell them where to look. And that's such a different approach to teaching than just spouting dogma and then expecting the students to repeat it or regurgitate it.
Well, when I was younger, that's everything was rote. And, you know, and then they changed when they went into the new paradigm of No Child Left Behind, or whatever they wanted to call it, which was Let's Leave Every Child Behind, a continuation of that mess. And then, you know, we've gone into Common Core, and it's all ridiculous. And, you know, I can show you a great link. And when we do that program we've been talking about, I can show you a great link between Agenda 21, Agenda 30, and Common Core education.
Oh, wow. Well, wow. Let's hit upon that. That sounds really interesting. And it does fit together as part of a circle. Unfortunately, not a circle of wisdom, but definitely a circle of an agenda that encapsulates every aspect of people's lives.
Well, you know, guys, one of the things I was thinking about, and I'm just going to throw this out there for discussion. But one of the things I was thinking about this reset, as we're calling it, I look back and I wanted to find a parallel in history. And I believe there are always parallels in history. And I may not have the best parallel, but at least a recent, in some respects, parallel would be Reconstruction in the South, beginning in 1866, 1867, because they took the 10 states in the South, put them all under military dictatorship, told most of the adults that they couldn't vote. And for 10, 12, 14 years, the government counted the votes. The government was involved in everything. And they put a debt on the states that it took most of those states under Reconstruction, took them years and years to recover from. And some of them, basically Mississippi, hardly has ever recovered from that Reconstruction era dogma. And prior to, in 1860, one of the richest states in the Union was Mississippi. And since the war between the states, it has been the poorest state consistently. So I think there's a great lesson to be learned there. And then if we look at how during Reconstruction, how they basically replaced all of the teachers and all of the preachers in the South and brought in their carpetbaggers to create an entirely new education system. And even in churches, they were taught to worship the government. They had to say prayers for the government every day. And that is one of the reasons that we don't study Reconstruction today, is because of the enormity of what they actually did to the people of the South during Reconstruction. And that may be a poor analogy for a parallel, but I think there is some credit to that.
No, man, I think you're exactly...
Go ahead, Giuseppe.
I think Mike is exactly right on. And there's a modern parallel with the globalist, the international Jew, as Henry Ford refers to them. They have done an infiltration program in southern cities such as Charlottesville and in various small towns in North Carolina, where they send in a a Jewish radical, and suddenly he's elected mayor, and suddenly there's a couple of them in the state, and suddenly they're taking over state government, and now all of a sudden these traditional southern states, conservative like Virginia and North Carolina, suddenly they're doing all these radical implementations of policy for transsexuals and for all this deviant weaponized minorities. And I think that nobody's really aware of that. That's going on.
A great point, Giuseppe. And if you want to, you mentioned North Carolina, and I look back at the governor now, Roy Cooper, and I looked at how he was groomed back 20, 25 years ago to bring him to this point. And most people do not understand is this is not an overnight plan by the globalists. This has been in place for decades, and they are very patient. If they meet resistance, they go around it and then attack it from another point. But when you look at like Roy Cooper especially, and I was looking back at him when he was attorney general, and that is where they bring a lot of their people. If you want to find out where the power structure is coming from, look at the attorney generals of the states. And there's no better example of that than Kamala Harris.
Well said.
And Bill Clinton.
Exactly. Good. That's another one to throw in there, for sure. And they've seemed to bring them through there for prominence. And the other thing is that most all of them are law school graduates. And law schools have been the bastion of cultural Marxism in this country for the past 50 to 60 years.
Now, why do you put the mark at 50 or 60 years? That's interesting.
Well, that is about as far as my studies go. I am sure it's probably before that, but I started with the present day about 10 years ago and started going backwards, looking at law school deans and seeing where about 50 to 60 years ago, they dropped any pretense of constitutionalism. And they went directly into precedent, and no rulings were to be made on anything. And I've talked with hundreds of lawyers over the past 10 years. And I've asked them individually, well, how much time did you spend in law school studying the Constitution? And it's either from 3 to 4 hours to nothing. So I don't understand how you're going to get someone to interpret the Constitution according to the ratification of the Constitution if they don't know anything about it. But that's their purpose. That's what they wanted to do. And now if you look at the majority of the Ivy League law schools, all of their deans are professed socialists, and they're very proud of the fact. And you could throw in Stanford University in that and several others. If you go back and do the research of these law schools throughout the country, well, you know, where better to have your cultural Marxists to have them sitting than in positions where they can make decisions which control everyone else?
Well, excellent point, Mike. And also, if you change that focus slightly to the Ivy League and the cultural Marxists control the presidency of every one of those Ivy League schools, they have key professors and leaders in all positions. For the international globalists being 2% of the American population, they control, I believe it's like between 25% and 50% of all the key chairs in all the Ivy League schools. It's just absurd level of power, academic power.
Well, I thought a great example of that, Giuseppe, just to throw in a minor example. Of course, it wasn't minor at the time, but was the Duke lacrosse team. If you remember that fiasco that occurred.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and here was the district attorney who completely fabricated evidence and didn't reveal exculpatory evidence. And, I thought it was critical that the staff, the faculty of Duke University was totally behind the lie. I mean, there were very few professors that didn't come out who weren't supporting the overall lie. And I found that very indicative all the way back then. That if suddenly all of your professors in all fields of learning are going to jump out to support a socialist lie, I think that's indicative of the character of the staff.
And tying it back into the theme of the new show, the Wisdom Circle, all those people completely lack wisdom. They're radicals, they're zealots, and they serve a dark agenda. And it's sad that these young people, as evidenced by all the fools that are involved in the burn, loot, and murder Antifa movement, and they really think they're doing something for the good of society. And I saw a picture the other day that just disgusted me of some young woman at one of these burn, loot, and murder riots, and she was holding up a big sign that said, "Turn in your parents as racists." And I'm like, my God, child, you are absolutely gone down the wrong path.
Well, it's an education system based on emotions. And it started, I believe, not started, but it really began to progress even more. It started back with Dewey and that group 100 years ago. But it began to progress when they did the after some school shootings, and they said, you know, they started talking about bullies in schools. And so then the answer to bullies in school was a self-esteem program where we take the young people and teach them that no one can say anything that hurts your feelings. And so if the truth hurts your feelings, no one can say the truth. It was a brilliant plan. I mean, you want to talk about a psyop. That is just absolutely, you get people to reject the truth because it feels bad.
That's to me the height of intellectual, spiritual, and emotional immaturity. I mean, literally, one of the great plans of the satanic globalists is to trap the unknowing individual at about the level of a six-year-old, somewhere between 6 and 8 years old. So low impulse control, empathic urges, the inability to have self-discipline, to have spiritual acumen, to have emotional discipline and intellectual discipline, redundancy, intentional. And it's just sad. I mean, we have a nation now, a great majority of sheeple children.
Well, that I couldn't have said it better. It's exactly true. And, you know, one of recommend for a reading list, you know, Crimes of the Educators, which I found to be one of the best books out there. And, you know, John Taylor Gatto is also another good source. John Taylor Gatto was a 30-year teacher in New York, and he passed away not too long ago. But I heard him in person in Tucson back in 98, I believe it was, and was fortunate enough to talk to him for some time. And he talked about how the entire education system during his tenure had turned to one of simple mind control. It's not about education anymore. It's to control the minds of the people who are going through the system. And we see that now. If you want to see everyone who is completely mind controlled, look at everyone who's wearing a mask.
Oh, well said. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of John Taylor Gatto. I was on his email list. I had attended a presentation with him and got to speak with him as well. And I considered him a real hero of the Republic.
Well,
And
go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, and Mike, you know, you made a great point earlier about how, you know, well, you know, all of a sudden now we can't have, you know, bullies or anyone that hurts your feelings. And as soon as you instill that kind of thinking, it immediately makes so that the government is the arbiter of behavior. That's really the point of the whole thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, what you do in all of these systems are designed around making the government itself and the government employees arbiters of every issue that you face in your lifetime. That is complete domination and control. That is dominion and control over the masses when you can get them, regardless of the problem, to look for the government as the solution.
Yeah, and it also goes with the information that we had talked about on a previous show about the Freudian and Bernaysian techniques of psychological manipulation that was first used to sell product, and then later it was expanded upon and sort of metastasized as a method of controlling the thinking of the masses of society.
Exactly. Are you gentlemen familiar with Friedrich Schiller? I'm sorry.
Yes, I am.
Okay. I would read one of his quotes that's always stuck in my head, Giuseppe and Dave, and that is, quote, "It is criminal to steal a purse, daring to steal a fortune, a mark of greatness to steal the mind of a nation. The blame diminishes as the guilt increases."
Yeah, that's a great
quote. Wow.
So true.
Wow, that's heavy. Well, so why don't we start jumping into this global reset? And Mike, please, as we go, weave in this reconstruction theme into this wherever you see fit, because I think there's a real parallel. And like they say, there's nothing new under the sun.
Well, these folks look back, Dave and Giuseppe, they look back to history. You know, we're not allowed to look back as history. We're too dumb. We have to react to emotions. But these people looked at plans that have worked over and over and over again. And it's like old Dandy Don Meredith used to say on Monday Night Football, you got to dance with who brung you. And so this is where they look.
You know, I've really
thought that they've sort of used, you know, history and different forms of government is sort of like a giant petri dish in which to experiment and figure out the most effective method of control upon a society.
Exactly.
You know, issue to bring up, Scorpio, is you had the wisdom to cover the new barbarians and how the speech that Dr. Donegan, a young Catholic, recently board certified pediatrician, was called to attend in Pittsburgh in the 60s, and a member of the globalist inner circles, Illuminati, I guess you would say, or the Freemasons, gave a 2-hour speech laying out the plans for the next 40 to 60 years. And it's stunning how back in the late 60s, they were already had in mind, essentially, the Great Reset. How did you come upon that knowledge, Scorpio?
Oh, well, what knowledge exactly?
To discover that the new barbarians existed, because it's been pretty much suppressed in modern history.
Yeah, you know, I'm not exactly sure where I came across. I came across those recordings about 10 years ago. And I'm not exactly sure where I first heard about him.
Okay. Yeah, but we did your show a month, 6 weeks ago, where we played a bunch of quotes of an now elderly Dr. Donegan and his recollections. I think he was interviewed like 25 years later in the late 80s or early 90s, and it was just chilling to hear him talk about everything that we now are witnessing. And the only successes of the freedom fighters and the free minds was they delayed it about 20 years. They thought they'd have this whole great reset by the end of the 20th century. And here it is, they're going for it in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you recall too, when Dr. Day, gave his speech, that was in the 1960s, he told those medical students that everything's in place and there's nothing can stop us now. So this has been, like Mike said at the beginning, this has been planned for a very long time.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we begin? Mike, any thoughts on are you familiar with the new barbarians at all?
Just a bit. I wouldn't call myself conversant at all, so I'm looking forward to listening to you gentlemen.
Well, Mike, I'll send you a link for those recordings. I think you'd really enjoy them. It's very interesting, and you can tell the man's very sincere about his experiences. It's very, very good. You'll like it. So, Giuseppe, you have
I have three clips about the Great Reset. The first one, this is
the greatest hits of the World Economic Forum Great Reset song, right?
Right. Well, the first one is actually which the Davos group, the World Economic Forum, this past June, only 3 months ago. This is their summary of it. It's 5 minutes long, but we'll play like a minute or two of the beginning where the villainous, like you said in pre-show chat, Scorpio, this guy Klaus Schwab looks like and talks like he's a James Bond villain, and you'll hear that. And if you see him, he's got a shaved head. All he's missing is the scar across his face from fighting Bond, and he'd be you know, he'd be there. And
Prince and he needs a little cat in his lap that he's petting, you know, to get right. The whole effect.
right. Yeah. Excuse me. So we'll play this one, and then there's a couple quotes. I'm sorry, clips from individuals who have a countering viewpoint. But let's start out with this from the globalist. This is their great idea, the Great Reset.
Okay, here we go.
Now is a historical moment, a time, not only to fight severe virus, but to shape the system.
We have a unique but rapidly shrinking window of opportunity to learn lessons and reset ourselves on a more sustainable path. It is an opportunity we have never had before and may never have again. So we must use all the levers we have at our disposal, knowing that each and every one of us has a vital role to play.
Now is the time to think what history would say about this crisis. And now is the time for all of us to define our own role. What is it that would make it so that history would look at this crisis as the great opportunity for reset?
The Great Reset is a welcome recognition that this human tragedy must be a wake-up call. It is imperative that we reimagine, rebuild, redesign, reinvigorate, and rebalance our world. Rebalancing investment, harnessing science and technology, and advancing the transition to net zero emissions, all elements of the Great Reset, are fundamental to building the future we need.
The world's problems fit on three sides of a triangle. It's one versus many, man versus nature, and the unfortunate foundation is long-term versus short-term.
We had already income inequality that was fueling income, race, gender inequality. We have a climate emergency, which we can't walk away from. There's no doubt that the very survival of the human race requires us to act.
Any recovery stimulus should have green conditions attached to it. Energy prices should reflect real costs.
You need private sector capital, private sector ingenuity, private sector technology, and private sector capabilities to come to the party. You need enormous trust between the private sector and the public sector for this to actually work.
We have to change our economy dramatically in the next 20 or 30 years, and the next 10 years is absolutely decisive.
The recovery has to be greener than any of the previous recoveries. And in order to do that, we need to ensure that the stimulus package, including fiscal and monetary, are much greener than they were before. So we cannot waste this opportunity to ensure that the very precious money that's raised from the next generation is spent on green and low carbon.
We will now start quite a high number of task forces to look at all the different issues, and we will present all those ideas to the people assembled in Davos. But at the same time, we will make Davos very different, very open, to ensure that we do not fall back to old recipes, but that we really look at forward-oriented solutions.
Young entrepreneurs, especially from developing countries that are there and can see the right problem, can really step up and create solutions.
Finding profitable solutions to problems of the people and the planet, and we're starting to see firms move to that, and we're seeing firms that behave responsibly in that way actually doing better on conventional measures of profitability and doing better in this particular period.
We've also seen social entrepreneurs step in incredible ways. Not only has it exposed the precarious reality, but then it has also exposed the opportunity to recenter the reset around the most vulnerable and those on the edge, where it only takes something like a pandemic or difficult circumstances to slide into poverty.
And then we need to couple that with new initiatives to equip more people with the digital skills they'll need, not just to have a tech job, but a job that is increasingly tech-enabled in almost every part of the economy. If we can empower consumers with all of this, I think we unleash this next generation to have a much broader impact more quickly.
We can never again allow our health, education, care systems to be underfunded.
We need our imagination here. Possible is being redefined each and every day right now. So the next time someone tells us that tackling climate change is either too costly or too difficult, I think we need to remind them and remind ourselves of what just is happening right now.
We not only have to demand change, but also create change.
We have to live up to the expectations which we have created, and we will do so.
Wow, sounds pretty good.
That's a great election eclipse there, Giuseppe. And, you know, I just can't help it. Every time I hear this Klaus Schwab guy talk, I always go to that final scene in Doctor Strangelove, where Doctor Strangelove is convincing them all that they can live underground in these deep mines during the nuclear war and survive, you know. Animals can be slaughtered, you know. It's just bizarre.
It is bizarre. It's completely bizarre. And it's funny how they're so oily, unctuous, smooth, and making it sound so great that the Green New Deal and all the pithy phrases they throw out. But as I'm sure Mike will want to observe here, all their initiatives are very, very evil.
Absolutely.
Yes. And yeah. Again, and it's all in such nice flowery language. It's very non-specific and vague.
Well, their language is always intended to massage the emotions, and it always their language. It's like sustainability, which sounds so good to so many people and has been so used throughout since the. The 1980s and 1990s when they first came upon this sustainability program. Well, who could be against sustainability? So they are word geniuses as well, and they keep using these phrases over and over again. And then you'll see when they come up with these magic phrases, then in a very short period of time, you will hear those exact phrases being said over and over by politicians and media personnel.
Yes, repetition is the essence of propaganda for sure. And, you know, just, I was sort of joking about this Klaus Schwab being like Dr. Strangelove, well, partly joking. But, the first thing I want to make sure everyone knows about this Klaus Schwab character is that he's a longtime Bilderberg Group member. And in fact, he's even a member of the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group. So this guy, you know, is at the top of the food chain in the Bilderberg Group, just for starters.
Of course, yeah. It's when I look at this and then, you know, again, I hate to keep referring back to this, but when we jump to this Estes Park Denver deal in 1987 and get into that, this is going to correlate and tie in perfectly to this.
Yeah, what's shocking.
Yeah, because it is all part of a circle, isn't it? The circle of this agenda that they want to, sort of spin around people like a spider web.
Well, that's true.
Tying
sorry,
it to
Giuseppe, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say sorry about stepping in. If you think about it in terms of this new show theme, the Wisdom Circle, the real wisdom would be to decentralize and to have local and regional series of organic farms and people controlling their own food production and migrating from oil-based plastics and move to hemp oil, hemp cotton, all these things that are really sustainable, all these things that would really empower people at the local and regional levels. That's the true path forward, but they don't want any of that. Instead, you pull the curtain of their flowery phrases back, much like in The Wizard of Oz when Toto yanked the curtain and revealed the great and powerful Oz was a little weasel. These little weasels are intent upon a stranglehold, a boot on the neck of the 7 billion people. And we're talking about maybe a couple thousand people at best doing this. And they want to ensure that you have no personal freedoms, that you have no ability to steer your own personal ship of state. It's really, really evil.
Well, hey, guys, and I know that I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I think I can take this reset idea all the way back to 1787 with the new Constitution.
Oh, wow. Tell us more.
Well, you look at the society that we had with the Articles of Confederation, and most people today will say, well, I wouldn't want the Articles of Confederation because this Constitution is so great. And then they tell you that they want term limits. Well, term limits were in the Articles of Confederation. And then they'll say, oh, well, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could just automatically recall a politician when we send them off to Washington and they do exactly the opposite of what they said they did? Well, the Articles of Confederation had immediate recall. And we look at that they consent of the governed. And we say that's what government is about. Articles of Confederation gave us consent of the government, consent of the governed. The Constitution of 1787 put everybody under the supremacy clause that made the central government supreme over everything. So to me, that was the first great reset in American history.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And, you know, another thing I'd like to sort of preface this on is that old Klaus Schwab makes it very clear that this COVID virus is a rare opportunity for them. And the actual quote he says is, the pandemic represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world. So they're not looking at this pandemic, this supposed pandemic, as some kind of a tragedy. It's an opportunity.
Of course. And it was a pre-planned opportunity.
Yeah, at least for 10 years minimum, yeah.
Well, if you look back since Fauci got in power, and Fauci is really the big pharma vaccine industrial complex inside man in so many ways, and he's been trying to push the idea of a pandemic since the AIDS discovery and the AIDS plague of the 80s. And the public up until recently had enough courage to realize, oh, I don't know if I really want to take one of these shots. I don't know if it's that bad. You know, the media keeps barking and bleating, B-L-E-A-T-I-N-G, like a sheep, about how terrible these pandemics are. And if you step back with a little bit of common sense and wisdom, you realize that even in the worst pandemic of the last 40 years, it hasn't been that bad. Mostly people who were going to die anyway, comorbidity, they already had kidney disease, they already had heart failure, they already had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, and they were going to die shortly anyway. And when you get a cold, you get pneumonia, that's what takes care of you. That's how comorbidity works. And so most people realize it wasn't a big deal. But what's so weird about this latest pandemic, which is really not that bad, I mean, not bad at all, and your survival rate is 99.76%, and the mortality rate is 0.24%, and that's total morbidity. So if you take out the 90% of comorbidity, it's 0.04%. And guess what? The death risk of taking a flu vaccine is 0.50, 0.5%. So literally, it's twice as dangerous and deadly to get a flu vaccine as it is to die from the novel coronavirus. This is the common sense we need that is so sorely lacking.
But with a media that is completely owned by the government, those truth factors not only don't get out, but they are suppressed, as we all know.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to history, you know, this Hong Kong flu that happened in 1968, 1969, and apparently they claim it killed a million people worldwide, that's been pretty much just sort of wiped from the memory hole, hasn't it? And you don't hear about it. And they even held, you know, the Woodstock Rock and Roll Festival in 1969, where they packed, what, a couple million people together without social distancing during this Hong Kong flu.
Excellent point. I mean, you just keep looking back. Every year, there's a flu season. Every year in defined terms, it's a pandemic because these diseases are spread thanks to the smallness of the world via the airplane. And so every year, some people get sick and a few people die as a percentage of the global population. It's really not a big deal. We're all going to die anyways. If suddenly half the population were to keel over, well, that's a true global pandemic that we should all be quite concerned about. But realistically, the way nature functions, whenever one of these lab created mutated bioweapons is released, it'll kill people in a lab real easy. But once it's released into nature, as for example the intentionally released Ebola virus in 2014, it killed 23,000 people, and then all of a sudden it modulated. It became very benign, and nothing was done. They didn't have a vaccine, just like the previous ones, the H1N1, the swine flu. They all modulate for the great plan of nature, the great divine energetic code of instruction doesn't want the world and all life wiped out by a man-made created virus. So, you know, another point that people don't take into account.
Yeah, virus attenuation. That's part of the big picture and the big plan, and they can't stop that. These people are not gods like they want us to think. You know, I wanted just to set the stage a little bit. You know, when you played that clip, you know, we heard Prince Charles. Well, the first voice, of course, was Klaus Schwab. And then Prince Charles was speaking. And then after that, we heard Christian Nina Giorve. I don't know how to say her name. Giorvera. She is the head of the International Monetary Fund and an executive of the World Bank. So she holds the top positions in the International Monetary Fund and one of the top positions in the World Bank, which are incidentally both private institutions. They're not part of some, you know, philanthropy group or anything like that. Then the other guy we heard talking was Antonio Guterres, head of the United Nations. And one thing about him is that this guy was the head of the Socialist Party in Portugal from 1995 to 2002. And he was the High Commissioner for the United Nations Refugee Task Force from 2005 to 2015. And, of course, now he's the head of the United Nations. And incidentally, I believe this man is demonically influenced or possessed. If you look at his eyes, they're completely black. There's no light coming from his eyes whatsoever. It's really strange and creepy.
Yeah, without a doubt, Scorpio. And then factor in that they had that young 13-year-old MK-Ultra mind-controlled little girl, Greta Thunberg, who's just such a buffoon, and yet everybody acts like she's the incarnated Buddha with all this wisdom, and she is just a nasty little girl who back in the day deserved to have her face slapped for her disrespect and her her nasty disposition.
Yeah. Mike, any thoughts on the backgrounds of these people that are the leading stars of this World Economic Forum?
Well, we know, gentlemen, that they do not get into these positions by happenstance. These people are pre-programmed, as we spoke before about how they bring through attorney generals and the others. You can sit and watch these people as they're brought forward. You know, there's so many great examples of this. I mean, like you mentioned Bill Clinton, and to think that he came from a state, Arkansas, and before 1992 was basically unheard of anywhere. And suddenly he's on the scene. He's the thing on the scene in 1992. And I can remember in 1992 saying there's no way this guy will get elected because America is not going to elect a draft dodger. But guess what? And then we move along, and I'm jumping ahead, but then we go to, we have 9/11, and everybody in the world hates Arabs. And 7 years later, we've got a guy with an Arab name running for president. And people are saying, well, there's no way a guy by the name of Barack Obama is going to be elected after 9/11. Well, yeah, guess what? Of course, if you looked and you follow the track record here, you have to understand that something was seriously in the making when he ran for that Senate seat in Illinois. And he ran against, gosh, I'm trying to think of his name. He was ambassador to the UN, a Republican, a black guy. Somebody help me out with that if you can. But he was a candidate for president prior to that. And he runs.
Alan Keyes?
Yeah, Alan Keyes. And Alan Keyes runs against him. Alan Keyes has a name. He was well known. And if you look at the demographics, electoral demographics of Illinois, the five counties around Cook County are the liberal bastions of the state. But the rest of the state is considered conservative. So you had almost a coin flip in that state, and both candidates were black, so that was a non-factor. And so here they are running against each other. Well, anybody with any brains would say that the man with the history and all he has to do is carry the swing votes. But the fact is Obama beat him handily, I mean big time, for that Senate seat. And I immediately thought to myself, well, they're setting him up for something when he won the Senate seat. Of course, he had made the speech at the Democratic National Convention before that. Nobody had heard
right,
anything.
And guess, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just wanted to say, and guess who invited him to give that speech? Skull and Bones member John Kerry.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a plan. They are following the plan. And when you look at these people, go look at their backgrounds and look at how they suddenly come up on the scene. And, you know, my grandfather used to say, and I'm not going to use the word he used, but my grandpa used to say, he said, boy, when the river's running backwards, somebody's messing with it. So when you see things that don't make sense, like how does Obama win that election in Illinois when he was running against a known name, and again, both are black, that's a non-factor, it made no sense. And then, you know, then he's running for president. Suddenly he becomes preeminent, just like Bill Clinton did in 92. And then if we jump to, you know, go back to 2000, the media immediately declared George W. Bush the front runner. I mean, before there was one primary, he was the front runner. These things are easy to see.
Oh, I remember that very well, Mike.
Right.
You know, I'll never forget this. It's such a minor memory, but it just stuck in my mind. Back when this was first starting, like you said, before there was even a primary, before anything, I was in the grocery store waiting in line. And, you know, back then they had the Time magazine in front of the cash register, right? And there was a big full cover picture of George Bush's face. And it said, our next president? ?
Well, it's all part of the mind game. You put the photo out there. And then, you know, we know, and I'm sure you gentlemen are familiar with what Bush did as governor of Texas when he invited the Taliban to come to Texas. They were wined and dined for, you know, about 10 days, the head of the Taliban in Afghanistan. and they took him to Texas Ranger baseball games and all of the other stuff. And, you know, what a fantastic deal. And the Taliban was then offered by Unocal Oil Company a $40 million bribe to allow a pipeline across Afghanistan. And the Taliban took the $40 million, hustled on back to Afghanistan, and then gives America the big raspberry. Well, you know what's going to happen after that happens. You know, you took the money, you know, under the pretense, you went back. And so then, you know, then George Bush is elected, and the very representative from Unocal Oil Company is then put in as the leader of Afghanistan after the Taliban is overthrown. This is all scripted. It's impossible not to see it.
Yeah, Karzai. Yeah, the Karzai. They used to joke and say that instead of he wasn't the president of the country, he was the mayor of Kabul.
True, but it's, you know, you look at these things and these things are planned. And I realized that my position at one time in the bowels of the monster gave me a little bit more of an idea of how to look at these indicators. But the point is that if you have a few gray cells to rub together, you can look at and almost predict these things as they're coming along. And I know last Saturday we had a great time trying to predict what's going to happen with this election. And that, too, is you have to go back and look at indicators which give you an idea of what's going to happen. Do you know for sure? No, but you can see how it's being set up and the factors that go into setting the whole thing up.
Yeah, well, exactly. They drop little breadcrumbs for us to follow and lead our minds in the right direction. Absolutely. Well, we're already at the top of the hour. And so next hour, I want to unpack some of the specific ideas that they're putting forth in this World Economic Forum. I want to get you guys' takes on it. And I'd just like to remind everyone out there listening that this is fully listener supported. So come aboard and become a Patreon member. Come on Revolution Radio or freedomslips.com and keep this bastion of free speech running. Because really, it's more important than ever with this ocean of lies that we have to swim in. With the mainstream media, it's nothing short of incredible, just the level. Okay, there's the music. We'll be right back, guys, with part two of World Economic Forum.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Who owns
controls you. If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, we're back for the second hour of the maiden voyage of the Circle of Wisdom. And I'm here with Giuseppe and Mr. Mike Gatti, and we're talking about the World Economic Forum and the so-called global reset. And really, what this really is, if you start to break it down, the system that they created is collapsing. Through debt and fiat money. Fiat money never lasts more than a couple hundred years without some kind of major collapse, and we're sitting upon that now. So this is their attempt to sort of cover up everything and keep themselves in power. I mean, if you really want to just boil it down. And I was talking about this Kristalina Georgieva, the head of the IMF and the executive director of the World Bank, both of which are private institutions. I left out that she is a graduate and holds a PhD in economics from the Karl Marx Higher Institute of Economics in Sofia, Bulgaria. So that's quite a degree to have, wouldn't you guys say, huh?
You can't do better than go to the Master Marx.
Not the school I would attend.
Me either.
Okay.
But Dave, if I could, I know that there are a lot of people, I'll do this very quickly, but I just wanted to point out, I know there's a lot of people, when I say things like when I said that the Constitution was the first great reset, I just very quickly, I wanted to ask you gentlemen a question. Are you gentlemen familiar with Benjamin Rush?
I know the name, but
no.
I couldn't tell you.
I don't believe so.
Okay. He is considered to be one of the founders, and he is, highly spoken of as a Christian founder by people like David Barton and other charlatans out there hawking the Constitution as inspired by God. But here was two things, and Benjamin Rush was considered the father of modern psychology. So let me go back to the constitutional era period and just run two quick quotes by you. The first thing is Benjamin Rush said that the quest for freedom was a mental illness. And here's his direct quote. The extensive influence which these opinions, excited by the excess passion for liberty, had upon the understandings, passions, and morals of many of the citizens of the United States constituted a species of insanity, which I shall take the liberty of distinguishing by the name of anarchia, unquote. So then we move to another quote by this wonderful founder, a wonderful Christian founder, and here it was his, another quote. And this one I think is very relevant to today. He said, quote, let our pupil be taught that he does not belong to himself, but that he is public property. Let him be taught to love his family, but let him be taught at the same time that he must forsake and even forget them when the welfare of his country requires it, unquote.
Wow.
So when I tell people, you know, and I made that statement that the first reset, I wanted to offer some substantiation to that, and it wasn't just an off-the-cuff thing. And there are others examples of this to where they were doing a great reset all the way back then. I'm sorry I jumped us off the track, but take us back, Dave, please.
No, it's actually very relevant, and it really sets the stage for this because, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, and, you know, I used to wonder, like, well, when did this corruption problem start in Washington, D.C.? You know, when did that start? When did this culture of corruption begin? And you can see that, you know, it sort of happened when they forced the Constitution through, you know, and it was basically a watered-down version of what it could have been, a much freer system if the influence of the bankers and the people that were already planning for a sort of a controlled society weren't in place.
Well, the Constitution, I've said this, and there is a historian, Sheldon Richmond, who actually said this first, so I don't want to plagiarize him, but he said that the Constitution was a revolution in favor of government. And he was exactly correct, in my opinion, and I think the evidence is out there, and it's overwhelming.
Oh, wow, that's very clever. Yeah, brevity is the soul of wit. That's just so right on point. Okay, so I just want to start unpacking what they're actually telling us, and then I want to get your guys' reaction about what they're actually telling the public. So they're saying that there's three steps for this great reset, and this is all from their official website and from their own writings. These aren't my words. So the step number one is to steer the market towards more fair outcomes. So what do you guys think about that? What does that mean? How would you interpret that?
Well, a planned controlled economy. And I'd also like to interject that, Benjamin Rush's quote shows that, even though he was a staunch Christian, he embraced a Talmudic-like view that the citizenry is cattle. I mean, deeply disturbing to have that view.
Well, he is projected as a Christian by people like David Barton and others, but in fact, he was a Unitarian, full blood Giuseppe. He was no Trinitarian.
Oh, okay, got it.
So is Unitarian sort of the same thing as deist? Because I often hear the founding fathers described as deists in official historical writings.
Well, there's quite a bit of relation between the two. And, you know, in the letters between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, near the end of their lives, they were communicating quite a bit. They hadn't spoken for years, and then they suddenly started writing to each other again. And ironically, they both died on the same day, July the 4th of 1826. And but immediately prior, just a month or so, Jefferson had written to John Adams and saying, you know, I wish that I could live long enough to see an America in which every man was a Unitarian. So
right.
And he had gone through his Bible and erased anything, any sayings by Christ. So there was no doubt he was a Unitarian, and probably, you know, and that's one of the things about the Constitution. The founders themselves, among their letters, indicated over and over again that the most devout Christian among them was, in fact, Patrick Henry. And Patrick Henry fought harder against the Constitution than anyone. So wherein, that's where I ask these people who say it was divinely inspired. Well, what happened? Did Patrick Henry not get the memo?
Right. And it's sort of this sacred mythology that they've constructed around the Constitution and the founding fathers. And we see these same forces in play right now with the sanctification and the canonization of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was anything but a saint and a corruptive influence upon society in general. So we're seeing those same forces at work right now. It's incredible.
Well, absolutely. Let's all embrace the lady who said that sex between adults and children over 12 should never be a crime.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, they just love kids. I mean, it's not a crime, man. Come on. Don't be so uptight.
In my mind, there's a difference between...
Go ahead, Giuseppe. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In my mind, there's a difference between loving a kid and making love to a kid that is an impenetrable wall that should never be breached. And secondly, I'd like to get Mike's quick thoughts on how 100 years ago, the globalists pulled the same shenanigans by inserting the Zionist Louis Brandeis into the Supreme Court, who claimed to be a liberal but was actually a traitor. And we're seeing much the same phenomenon with Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Well, that is true. And, you know, we can go back and look if we want to get back to how we started inserting socialists into the Supreme Court. We'd have to go back and take a look at King Abe the First. He did that quite a bit. Especially with Salmon P. Chase. And so, yes, there's quite a bit of this. And Dave, I love your analogy that there is nothing new under the sun, because we're seeing a repetition of these things. And I was just thinking about, we talk about fake news. And I was doing some research for Sunday night's program, and I saw where, you know, that during the debate over the ratification of the Constitution, the Federalist-owned media put out into their media that to try to discredit Patrick Henry and his opposition to the Constitution, they put out that he was no longer a Christian, that he had converted to being a deist. And then after they saw that that wasn't gathering the necessary foothold, they then came out and said, well, Patrick Henry has now decided that he supports the Constitution. So we had this. We had CNN in 1788.
That's funny. Most people don't know that. That's an interesting story. So, Mike, let me get your take on this. They're talking about the number one goal or step they have to take for this global reset is to steer the market towards more fair outcome. What does that mean to you, Mike?
Well, see, here's the thing, is there is no such thing. If we want to talk about equality, equality should always be the equality of opportunity. All of us should have the same opportunity, and the rest of it depends on us. If when you go to an outcome-based equality, that constitutes a huge problem. Then everyone who would be the kind of person who goes out there and works extremely hard to create something really good for themselves, then they have to be relegated down to the level of the person who doesn't really care if they do anything or not. So equality of outcome, it's like when they started, you know, we need a minimum wage, we need a livable minimum wage. And I thought, well, hey, if you want to give, why don't we just give everybody $100,000 a year? You know, if you're going to set some arbitrary figure, why does it make any difference where you set the arbitrary figure? If you're going to say everybody should have this, well, then let's give everybody $100,000 a year. No one has to work. And let's see how long that system works. So this is an outcome-based and it never works. It's complete and utter socialism. Because there is no such thing. And I used to make this statement to my class when I was teaching, and of course it gives away my age, but I used to say, if everyone was created equal, I could play basketball like Michael Jordan.
That's right, and it's not fair otherwise.
Right. It's not fair that they have these abilities that I don't have, so why don't we do that? These people, let's do this thing in reverse. Let's take all of the money that LeBron James has and a lot of these other people, and let's distribute that to poor white people.
Brilliant idea. I love it.
Then we have take all of these athletes with all this money, and let's take all of their money and, why should we pay someone $800,000 to $1.5 million to play a game, a kid's game? Let's let them keep playing. Let's just take that money and let's distribute it out. Let's just take LeBron James's money, and to make sure we stay on the same color barrier, let's take all of LeBron James's money and distribute it throughout the streets of Chicago. Maybe they'll quit killing each other.
Right. And, that's such a great point, Mike. And, ultimately, when you have a kind of government like that, the only way it can work is if it's by the force of a gun, by the barrel of a gun. Like Mao said, it has to be a dictatorial government backed up by the threat of violence and even death.
Well, Dave, you said it perfectly. If you have a opportunity-based economy, an opportunity-based society, you don't need government. You need very, very limited government. If you have a outcome-based to where everyone has to be created equal, it requires the mandates of government. So what government is doing is just trying to perpetuate itself into every facet of society.
Giuseppe, what are your thoughts?
I think Mike makes some powerful points. I mean, it's funny that a lot of times these days, socialism is used in place of the word communism, and real German socialism from the late 1800s, like it was employed in Wisconsin, really just reined in the plutocrats who were polluting the environment terribly, who were abusing child labor, and it served the citizens, but it also enhanced and supported entrepreneurialism and supported hard work. And so I think that we need a new word like populism or something, or I don't even know what the new word should be. But I think that what's interesting is that these globalist parasites, for example, just in the Great Reset, have they knew it was coming. They short sold on the Wall Street casino to the tune of a profitability of about $150 trillion. And that's $150 trillion that are stolen from the mom and pop investors, from the pension funds that are in there. And they'll, like, people will say, who believe the lies of the mainstream media, oh, but the stock market came back. Well, no, it didn't. It was diluted. And what came back just gives you your original number in diluted fashion, in inflationary fashion. You actually lost all that while they stole it, and their gains parallel your gains. And that's the whole scam of the Wall Street casino. Like our good friend of show Dave Gaheri for years had a radio show with a Wall Street insider, and he called it on the corner of Wall and Fraud instead of on the corner of Wall and Broad. And I think that it would be interesting to see, these good-hearted globalists, especially the ones that I just described who stole $150 trillion, why don't they set up a tithe system where, just independent of your skin color, poor white, poor black, poor Mexican, poor whomever, I mean, poor Hmong who are here now, why don't they get, a tithe of a couple grand a month so they could at least succeed, and then give that tithe to everyone, because we can all use extra money in this inflationary system. But what those satanic parasites would do, say if the number was raised to say 6,000, well, they'd legalize Wall Street gambling via apps so they could still steal it from these people. There's never going to be an equitable system and under this enslavement of these globalist parasites.
Yeah, and you know, in a lot of ways too, this whole COVID agenda that we're living through is sort of just a test run to get the entire world used to taking orders from essentially a central source, you know, the WHO and the scientists that work for them. So this is sort of a test run in getting this system cranked up and running. You know, it's incredible. Now, you know, number two on this thing is investment, advance, shared goals, equality, and sustainability. So here, this word that Mike was talking about, sustainability, that is so directly tied to Agenda 20 and Agenda 2030, Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030, they're so closely tied together with this word sustainability.
Exactly, and that's, again, these key phrases that they throw out, and then they get everybody repeating them. And, you know, we go back to their goals in 1992, 1987, and the next thing you know, shortly after that, even in very small towns, you saw their city planners coming up with sustainability programs where rent was controlled, where all of these socialist maneuvers were put into place. So, you know, it's like reading a map to see where they're going when they start this stuff. But unfortunately, most Americans are caught up in Dancing with the Stars or cars going very fast in a big circle, and they have lost the ability to actually look at things objectively and to figure out what's actually going on.
Yeah, it's really tragic, Mike. The oppressive implementation of Panamet Kerkhanis's bread and circuses is so overwhelming to the average Western world citizen that they're all focused on the latest superhero movie or the in Europe, the soccer stars, in America, the LeBron James or the NFL stars and the TV stars, the reality TV. And now you add to it these vain internet stars like on TikTok or on YouTube, or you know, all they do is on Twitch they document their banal lives of playing a video game or what have you, and yet millions upon millions of people watch them, follow them, and donate money to them, making them relatively instant millionaires. The whole system is so absurd. And another phrase that's constantly being bandied about by the globalist parasites is the new normal. And I'll tell you what, it's sad that these entranced and trained fools are just going along with the new normal, because I guarantee you, nobody is going to like the new normal.
Well, no, we're seeing the new normal right now, aren't we? With masks and social distancing and putting up plastic shields everywhere so people can't possibly breathe on each other. You know, it's just too dangerous to breathe on one another now.
Well, that's true. One of the things I wanted to bring up was the fact I saw a statistic the other day that was just almost heart-stopping, and that is the fact that since the 1st of March, this country has lost approximately 167,000 businesses that will never reopen. And I don't think we've thought about the full impact of that, but I was talking to a good friend, and I told them we were talking about this situation. And I said, well, you know, we're not going to fix this situation. We have to concentrate on surviving this situation.
That's a good point. And, you know, small business is really sort of the essence of what made America great. And it was the symbolic of opportunity. You could start your own business, and it was up to you whether or not it succeeded or failed. And now we're just going to be left with a bunch of big corporations. And, you know, the top 1,000 corporations are all members of this World Economic Forum. So that should give everyone listening out there some idea as to how they're able to create this monoculture that we see spanning across almost every major corporation.
It's interesting that Mike cited the conservative numbers of statistics, which are actual closings. And there's at least a 500,000 businesses that are on life support right now. And, you know, another month or two or three of having to pay full rent and with marginal revenues such as restaurants, they will be going out of business. We're literally just seeing the beginning of the massive ascent in the graph curve of business closures. It's real tragedy because those are real people with small to medium-sized businesses. It's a tragedy.
Well, and sure, exactly. When you start your own business too, oftentimes people dump their life savings in it to get it going.
Exactly, and that was part of, and you alluded to it, both you gentlemen, that was what America was all about, was that hope and that, if I come up with a better, and I hate this phrase, but if I come up with a better mousetrap, I can go out there and I can work my butt off and I can make myself a good living and provide for my family. Well, you take that away from the mentality of the citizen and you create instead this guaranteed outcome of it doesn't make any difference what you do. You're going to be guaranteed. The government is going to guarantee the outcome so that you will not be treated any differently. But what's really going to happen is you will not be treated any differently than your fellow cellmate in the gulag.
That's right, and the people who strive for excellence aren't going to stand out at all because they're not going to be rewarded for it. In fact, they'll probably be punished for it, would be my guess. I wanted to get into number three of these things that have to happen for this global reset. And number three is harness the innovations of the fourth industrial revolution. And just to note, this term fourth industrial revolution is from a book by Klaus Schwab of the same title, The Fourth Industrial Revolution. So he's selling his books, which is interesting. And, you know, this Klaus Schwab character, all he was a college professor. If you look at his background, he was some college professor in Switzerland, but somehow he's a member of the Bilderberg Group, and he created this World Economic Forum that all 1,000 of the top corporations belong to. And many of these corporations pay $650,000 a year to be members. So this fourth industrial revolution, he even talks about vaccines, testing, therapeutics. That's part of the fourth industrial revolution. And Klaus Schwab actually said on one of these videos I watched, he said flat out that, well, when it comes to vaccines, we don't know if you'll need, you know, one shot or how many boosters you'll need, or even if you'll need a new shot every year.
It's interesting, gentlemen, that I just saw on my email news alert from the Washington Post, the traitorous globalist rag that it's now become under the Bezos ownership, a news alert that Johnson & Johnson is going into a 60,000 patient final trial for its one-shot coronavirus vaccine. One shot to alter your DNA and make it resistant to the common cold, which is the coronavirus, which has been around for millions of years. So what could go wrong with that?
Well, I found it interesting that he's actually admitting that, well, hey, we don't know for sure, but you might need a shot every year. That's what I've suspected all along since this started, that once they get this thing going, you're going to need a new shot every year, whether or not you want one or not.
Well, have you noticed also, gentlemen, that they ran this one ran it up the flagpole to see who would look at it back then about a week ago, that, hey, there may be a shortage of these vaccines. So we're really troubled as to who will get them first. So what you're doing in the minds of Joe Moron out there is creating the fact, hey, I've got to get this vaccine, because it may be limited and I've got to get it. So it's part of the mind game of saying, hey, it may be very limited in the beginning.
Yeah, it's like you better line up at the concert to get your tickets for the Beatles reunion tour kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, something bad's coming to push their mandatory vaccine agenda forward. It's like they are pretty easy to read after everything we've seen the last 6 months. So something bad's coming.
Yeah, and another thing that Klaus Schwab admitted beyond just, hey, you might need a vaccine every year. We just don't know yet, but it's possible. They're actually saying that this part of this fourth industrial revolution is going to be facial recognition. And they used it in a term for tracking the public, which I found like, oh, by the way, you're going to be tracked like a cat, you know, a cow or something. We have to keep an eye on you because we know a lot of people aren't going to like this new system.
Well, if you're going to track the public, you're going to have to get them to take their mask off. Because this is not going to work. This facial recognition will not work when you're wearing a mask. So when they get all their facial recognition ready to go, all of the dangers will be taken away and everybody will be told to take their mask off, throw them away.
You know, that's interesting, yeah. Mike, because I've read recently where some of these more advanced AI-driven facial recognition can now identify people even with a mask.
Wow, I hadn't read that. That's interesting, but I'm not surprised.
Well, and another thing that they're saying that in this fourth industrial revolution, which I found to be absolutely shocking, this is directly from their own videos. This isn't any conspiracy literature I was reading. They said that in the future, our bodies will not be organic or natural, and we're going to be connected to chips and brainwave readers, you know, this neural network that Elon Musk is trying to unveil, and that they even said, and this is a quote from the video, you won't be able to distinguish what is natural or artificial.
Well, that's going to all come from the vaccines, right? We don't know what's going to be injected. So if we're going to create an artificial intelligence, it will have to be done with those inserted microchips.
You know, to me, one of the great lessons of history, the wisdom lessons, is that the Bible is an actual historical record. And pretty much, even though it's a lot of it has been spun for a certain agenda, I don't think that this is going to be allowed to happen by the higher powers, because it's been done before. And isn't that what was the destruction of Babylon? Is because they were creating hybrid entities and all types of what we would now call genetic manipulation. That's what got the world back then pretty much destroyed. I mean, have you guys interpreted it that way?
Oh, excellent point. Giuseppe. That is exactly true. And I know that these planners, they have a, plan B, plan C, and the oh shit plan. And I know that they are set to deal with any contingency, but the contingency that comes from the Almighty, they can't deal with, I promise you. A great point.
That is a great point. Yeah, and that's why we're seeing Christianity attacked more than any other religion. Now, let's be honest here. Come on. It's fine to criticize Christianity, but if you criticize Islam, you're some kind of a xenophobic. And if you criticize Judaism, you're essentially an anti-Semitic and you're a bad person. So I find that to be interesting as well. Very good point, Giuseppe.
Well, thanks, man. I think that and throw into that that mind control, politically correct cocktail. If you comment on that, the actual provable differences of race, you're a racist.
Right. And you know, it's funny. There's no word that's thrown around. Like, what do you call someone that hates Christians and trashes Christians? I don't think there's a word for it, because we have, you know, we have homophobe if you don't like homosexuals. We have xenophobe if you don't like Islam, and we have anti-Semitic if you criticize Judaism. What's the term that we're supposed to call someone that hates Christians and hates Christian principles? I don't think there's a word for it, is there?
That's a great point. It's kind of like when they rebranded the people who were against abortion, they used to be called anti-abortionists, and they rebranded it as pro-life, which was really a good rebranding. And now they say pro-Islam, pro-Muslim, you know, it's such a joke.
Yeah, you know, Flippy made a great point in the comment section. We got to get the facts to find out what's in it. Just like Nancy Pelosi said about the Affordable Care Act.
Well, right. you can take that back to the Federalist guys. That's what the Federalists said to America after they came out with the Constitution. Let's ratify this thing so we can find out what's in it.
Wow, amazing. It's almost like, you know, all that's really changed are the costumes and the technology that we live in. You know, human nature and the way the game is played is essentially the same.
Exactly. And Giuseppe, are you familiar with, you and Dave both, are you familiar with Article 6, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution?
Mike, I know it exists, but unlike you and your vast knowledge, I do not have it memorized.
Well, one of the things they had to make sure of in the Constitutional Convention of 1787, 12 of the 13 states had an oath to the Christian faith. And this oath had to be taken before you could assume any public office. So when the Constitutional Convention got together, they had to make sure that couldn't be done. They had to get rid of it and eliminate it. So Article 6, Clause 3 got rid of the Christian oaths, not only in the federal government, but in the state governments as well. Now, several of the state governments kept their Christian oath, but you could not assume federal office with a Christian oath. So at that time, the states were appointing the senators. So if you went to the federal government as a senator, you were appointed by your legislature, you could not take an oath to Christianity before you went to the federal government.
Wow. That's
interesting.
I mean, one of the points of coming over and creating the United States, as far as I understand, Mike, you can agree or disagree, was they were tired of the monarch controlling the religion, and they wanted to come here and practice real Christianity. And so it's funny that right away they put the kibosh on that. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's a revolution in favor of government again. They wanted to make sure that, and I'm getting ready to send you guys something, send it to both of you, that details this. And ironically, one of the letters that was received at the Constitutional Convention came from the Synagogue of Philadelphia complaining about the oath to the Christian faith, because they were complaining that with the oath to the Christian faith, no Jew could be in public office.
Oh, wow. Mike, this is so great having everything put in a historical context, because it really does weave together with what they're trying to unveil right now. This is just an excellent conversation. I wanted just to bring out a couple other things and get your guys' reactions to these little facts and figures. So as I said earlier, there's over 1,000 corporations. The top 1,000 corporations are all members of the World Economic Forum, which is incredible in and of itself. And the Soros Investment Group is also a major player, big surprise. Bayer, the company Bayer, who just bought Monsanto, are major players. AstraZeneca, of course, one of the companies rushing to get us a vaccine, are also involved. And Microsoft, of course, Bill Gates, and MasterCard. And, of course, MasterCard recently made the news saying that they are committed to creating a digital currency. What are your thoughts on all that? It seems like one big circle.
Well, did you hear in that montage of clips, the MasterCard CEO must have listened to my show and stole my idea for the perfect triangle in his analogy?
Yes, he must listen.
But, I mean, it's just... you're just putting logs on the fire and proving excellent points. They're out to essentially achieve the stated goal in the New Barbarian speech of the late 60s, which is they want a bipolar, brutal control world government. The one pole will be China. The second pole will be Zionist control through Israel. And they want the United States sovereign nation to be destroyed via the color revolution. They want us to be part of the North American Union. They want us all vaccinated. Inside that vaccine will be nanoparticles that create some type of quantum tattoo that you can be scanned like a cow or a pig at a brutal criminal slaughterhouse, corporate slaughterhouse. You're going to be forced to obey via social credit score because it is a digital currency. If you do a show like this, you will look in your digital bank account online and, oh, your money's gone. Oh, bad boy, bad girl. Learn your lesson the hard way. And it's just, they want you to eat the GMO foods. They want you to consume the glyphosate, which will destroy your gut biome. And then they want to put you on corporate drugs that treat symptoms and only make you sicker. And they want you to get the vaccines, which give you cancer. And then they want you to go through chemo and radiation. And you have become an insanely profitable revenue stream as a global beast.
Very well said.
Wow, well said. Mike, what are your thoughts on these players? How, you know, all these big corporations are involved in this, essentially a club, and they're paying $650,000 a year to be a member.
Well, that, I think, was the entire purpose, was to take all of the commerce inside the country and put it under the control of the central government. In other words, you as an individual will not be allowed to go out here and start a business on your own without total government supervision and government control. And that is the end game. And as you were saying that, Giuseppe, you know what passed through my mind was Mark of the Beast.
Oh, man, clearly Mark of the Beast. In fact, the patents and the bills being ushered through the various corridors of federal power all have 666 in the title. It's just so, it's such a slap in the face and nobody's paying attention.
Well, especially
that's
the Christians.
Just a coincidence, though, Giuseppe. Come on.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, easy now. Don't hurt yourself.
Yeah. And let me throw in some more participants and get your guys' reaction to the kind of players that are actually involved in this thing. The meetings also include six representatives from each of the Bank of America, BlackRock, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, HSBC, you know, JP Morgan, Bridgewater Associates, Barclays, PayPal, and basically every big central bank player or, you know, bank in the world is involved in this as well, not just the corporation. So they're putting everything under this one big umbrella. It's simply incredible.
Well, Dave, stop and think about this. Most of the people you just named, were they not recipients of the huge bailout in 2008-2009?
Right. Yeah, so you join the club and there's benefits when you know these people aren't paying $650,000 a year for their health, you know. So, yeah, there's got to be benefits for membership to the club, right?
Oh, exactly. And you know, I think the three of us should start a club. And all of you folks who are out there listening, Dave will give you the address to send your check for $650,000, please.
I could live with that.
Yeah, it's just amazing. This umbrella that they have everything under, it's incredible. And, you know, one thing I found odd, too, was that another big tenet in this global resource reset, I'm sorry, is that we need to have more LGBT inclusion. Like, there isn't enough. We need more. And that is part of the tenets. And they're calling it LGBTI. I have no idea what I stands for.
I'm not sure I want to.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think I want to know.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope it doesn't mean interspecies like bestiality. Jeez.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised in the least, Giuseppe. And, gentlemen, I just sent you both the background on that Christian oath thing. Read it at your leisure, please.
Oh, thank you. I love when you send stuff.
Oh, great. Thanks, Mike.
You know, Dave, that's a key point you just made about what I call the weaponized minorities. So if you think about the mind control of the globalist media industrial complex, and you chan scan the hundreds of channels on cable TV now, right? You'd think that preface this by it's going to add up to more than 100% intentionally. You'd think that 70% of the population was homosexual. In reality, 3%. You'd think that 60% of the population was Jewish, 2%. And you'd think that a vast majority, 80%, was black, 19%. So what we have going on here is the globalists are using the three prongs of the Luciferian trident, the weaponized minority, the homosexual, the radical Jew, and the radical black, to essentially stab the decent, vast, real majority, the silent majority of America, stab them with this three-pronged trident, poison-tipped, I might add, that the symptoms of the poison are induced guilt, induced shame, induced desire to have everybody be equal, which is all, frankly, satanic bullshit. And the only opportunity you have for equality is we're all equal the moment we're born, and we're all equal the moment we die. And other than that, the whole point of this great experiment, the Republic of the United States of America, is to give you an opportunity to make something yourself or not make something yourself. That's the personal freedom. And I'm tired and angry, and why I came back to the mass media after not being involved in it for 2 decades is because these globalist satanic parasites are winning, and they're winning big. And somehow these sheep wearing masks need to wake up and fight for their country.
Could not agree more, Giuseppe. Well said.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah. Yeah. So we need more LGBTI inclusion, but there's not enough, which I found a little odd. I think there's plenty. And plus, I don't see why we have to hear about it all the time. What people do in their private lives is their own business. I don't really care to hear about it very much, you know. So, yeah, what, any other thoughts? Because we're actually coming close to the close of the show. What else would you guys throw into the mix here? Maybe Mike, go first.
Well, I just, again, I see it all as a pre-planned. I see they are looking as their plan came together. They knew in 2008, 2009 that they could bail out, but they knew that that bailout would only last. And if you look at how they used the bailout, it was remarkable. The bailout was sent to all of these companies that you name many of them, Dave, that were too big to fail. And so what happened was is that bailout was put onto the taxpayer in several respects. And so the taxpayer then paid to keep the banks in business, who would then take the money that they received from their bailout and loan it out to the people who gave it to them to start with at, confiscatory interest in many cases on credit cards. So the taxpayer loans the banks a couple of trillion to stay in business, and then they loan that money out to the people again at these confiscatory rates. And it's a big circle, but most Americans can't see it. But what we're seeing is the culmination. It's all coming down into that funnel now. And so that is the entire point. That is where we're going. Your thoughts, Giuseppe?
Excellent point, Mike. And I would like to read two paragraphs from an opinion piece David Icke wrote at his website in June when it became clear to him and you and I and Scorpio what the scam of the Great Reset really was. And here's the two paragraphs, open quote from David Icke. Due to the pervasiveness of oligarchism, mass exploitation, wars, and pollution have laid waste to ecosystems and countless human lives alike. And as the neoliberal order continues to careen towards the inevitable breakdown of a $2 quadrillion derivatives bubble, which our unrepentant decades of decadence has caused, very serious choices will need to be made. Many false solutions will be presented as society wakes up to the burning building it is trapped in. And unless our minds have become aware of those false solutions, not to mention those arsonists managing this fire from the top, then many well-intentioned souls from all walks of life may sign on to their own death warrants and accidentally usher in a solution far worse than the disease they sought to remedy. End quote. Man, that's just it. The disease they sought to remedy. That's the big scam, man. That's the COVID-19 ploy of the Great Reset, is that we've got this population, world population, so frightened of a bug that you have a 99.76% chance of surviving, twice as likely to survive this bug as a flu vaccine, and yet we're going to burn the world down in the new world order that's coming. The Great Reset, the Green New Deal, the new normal is just going to be horrible. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, most assuredly. You have to have the institutionalized ignorant to make this happen, Giuseppe. We have to have these people who believe that the government has the answer to every question that they would ever come up with.
The great power of the mass media industrial complex is that it's so hypnotic, so mind controlling. And, you know, Scorpio, we lost on the call, I think, because he's in Ecuador, and sometimes that happens. Sometimes he comes across these brilliant insights, and he found this four-part documentary that is on YouTube under the page called Just Adam Curtis, standard spelling, C-U-R-T-I-S. Right. And this fella is a British documentarian, and he made this awesome documentary called Century of the Self, which really pretty much reveals that many of us knew, but he does such a great job of historical clips and relevance and first-person interviews with like Bernays's daughter and such, to prove that the Frankfurt School, as you well know, was a bunch of satanic internationalist Jews who were hell-bent on controlling the minds of the goyim, the human cattle that they feel they're superior to. And they really started out, and Freud, who was such a deviant and such a dark, addicted Satanist with no spiritual practice, projected his own demons, which were, you know, affixed to him and feeding on him and feeding him these insights and these dark thoughts, the insights into how to control a lot of decent, innocent people. And that the nephew Bernays took that ball and ran with it. And it's so sad to this day how effective those mind control techniques are. I mean, what do you think of that initiative, the mind control initiative, Mike?
Well, I stop and think and go back to 1981 with CIA Director William Casey, when he said, we will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false. And to tie that in with, how they reverse things on us, I was just thinking about an article I read recently about the tyranny of the minority, but they are saying... This article says that the minority is the Republicans in Congress who are controlled by the Tea Party. Tea Parties haven't been influential for 10 years.
Oh, yeah. That was a great initiative. Tea as in taxed enough already. It was a great early effort to fight back against these federal parasites, but it was quickly co-opted by what was his name? Dick something, a senator from Illinois who, I'll take leadership of this. And he completely steered it to a very ineffective organization that didn't fight against taxes or anything, and kind of became a, you know, kind of a buffoonish thing with people wearing tea bags on their hats and such, and not anything lost the intent of the original creators, which is, you know, that's how the deep state works, man. You got a good idea, you get a few people together, get a little momentum, it will be completely subverted, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And of course, the $1 million that the Koch brothers put into that didn't hurt anything either.
Right, right. The internationalist Jew brothers who have benefited so much from the government. You know, it's funny. I've heard it said that for people like the Koch brothers, the United States largesse from the federal well is socialism for the elite and capitalism for the rest of us. And that's so true. How people don't understand how much in terms of billions of dollars is giving to these wealthy entities, these corporations and these powerful individuals like the Koch brothers. It's just insane. But the vast size of the federal government, like Nancy Pelosi said, we'll know what's in the bill once we pass it. And that's the entire lawmaking process these days of the federal government. It's so complex and so Byzantine. Unless you are a rare individual, you have no idea what is going on, and you trust the media who is lying to you. It's such an insane, the opposite of the wisdom circle, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Very much so.
Well, Mike, I hope you regularly will join us on the Wisdom Circle. That's the first show, listeners. Scorpio was knocked off the air, but he'll be back next Wednesday, and hopefully so will Mike Gaddy, and so will I, Giuseppe. So thank you for listening, and have a good afternoon.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great one.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.